Good morning. That last line, may we truly realize the Tathagata's true meaning, always gets me every time. All these years that I've been hearing it, may we realize the meaning of suchness, you know, of that which cannot be named. Can we realize that in our lives? So that's why you'd show up on a Sunday morning to face the wall and give it a try. See what it would be like to realize. So there's several of you who are new to the Zendo, or at least new to me. You may come on one of the evenings that I am not here, but I want to welcome you to our community if you haven't been here before. We're all getting ready for a summer retreat. We call it Ango, which means peaceful dwelling, retreat as a peaceful dwelling in our hearts. Some members of the community will actually go up to the Grail Retreat Center, which is an hour or so away, for 5 weeks, or others will come for 2 or 3 days for different aspects. And yet the people, most of the people in our community will stay here and continue to practice on our regular practice schedule. And in particular, I recommend that you come to our Sunday study groups for the rest of the summer, in which we'll have an opportunity to really study in small group where people are able to discuss the meaning of our Ango text for this this period of time. I really encourage you to, you know, up your practice. That's what Ango's about. It's, you know, those of us who are like long-term members, we always fill out a little form, you know, says, I will add this much time to my sitting practice for the next 30 days. And so if you often miss coming to the Zendo, just try to make that extra bit of effort for the next 30 days during the Ango period. And during this time, we're going to be studying probably the most well-known and beloved text in the Soto, in the Japanese Soto Zen tradition, Genjo Koan, by Dogen Zenji. He was a 13th century Japanese monk, philosopher, poet, genius. And you can, if you go on our website to the summer retreat, you can go to the retreat page and download this writing of his, Genjo Koan, which is about a page and a half of PDF. It's not a long piece, deeply profound. Volumes and volumes have been written about Genjo Koan. And I encourage you to come for the study, and all the Dharma talks that will be online will also be dealing with this text. I'm not going to talk about this text today because we're just launching the Genjo Koan. I just want to say a word about the title. You know, because Dogen wrote at a really 13th century, so early in Japan, that was a time when all the literary pieces were written in Chinese, but kind of the other poetic works by many of the women and so many of the people in the court were written in Japanese. This piece that he wrote is in a combination of Chinese and Japanese. You know, Chinese characters that were pronounced in the Japanese way. So it's really hard to do any translation at all, and there are some absolutely delicious translations out there, and I encourage you to look at them if you're into that kind of thing. So Kaz Ta-Nehisi, which is the translation we use, calls it the actualizing the fundamental point. I'm going to be talking about that in a different context this morning. But what I think about actualizing the fundamental point, making real, making actual. You know, we sit here, we come to sit, be spiritual, but But to actualize it, to make it your life, is the point. So that everything you do, every interaction you have in the world is actualizing the truth of reality, is actualizing your interdependence with everything. It's a beautiful, beautiful translation. Other people, my teacher, Mayazumi Roshi, called it the koan of everyday life, which is another way to actualize the fundamental truth. And Thomas Cleary, who's written so, translated so many things, called it the issue at hand. So, you know, you could think of it as the issue at hand in each moment, not just when you're sitting zazen, but when you're putting on your shoes and when you're walking down the street and when you're working with your coworkers and your lovers and your family. It's every moment actualizing that point, the issue at hand. So although I'm not a translator, I have been studying this for some 30 years, and I have my own title for it that I want to share with you, which is showing up. Let's show up for every aspect of our lives. Let's show up as a human, you know, as an aspect of the whole universe. And supporting life at this time when we're called on to support life. And I'm so connected to this idea of showing up that along with some other members of the Sangha, we've created a year-long class that is just halfway through. It's closed. It's not open to everyone now, but the class is called The Bodhisattva Citizen. And it's about showing up both as a Dharma practitioner, as a bodhisattva, one that heals the suffering in the world, and as a citizen of this world, a citizen of this country, of this city. So we're studying the Eightfold Path as a kind of a compass to look at how we live our lives in this world, in this troubled world that we're in, and how can we respond in wholesome ways, in ways that reflect a wholesome view, a wholesome intentionality, action, livelihood, speech, those things. And this month, our study group is studying right livelihood. And we're sharing online and in class meetings our different experiences of right livelihood. You know, immediately we only think livelihood, oh, well, that's how I make a living. But it's really, it's how we live. Every decision we make, is it wholesome for the whole, or is it just for me? This is something, looking into the effects of what we do, how we live in general, our impact on people. Are we ethical? Are we moral? Are we sensitive to the issues at hand? Are we willing to take up our responsibilities as citizens of this country and this world? So, you know, this has been a question for Zen practitioners forever. What are our responsibilities? Most people who are attracted to a spiritual tradition very often don't want to be engaged, politically engaged. And so we really need to turn our spirituality and our understanding of our ethical requirements into action. into making a difference and seeing that those activities are, in fact, deep spiritual practice. So I have a koan for you that demonstrates this from 9th century China, old enough for you. This is Fuketsu's speck of dust, which appears in the Blue Cliff Record and in the Book of Serenity. Here's the koan. You know, koans are problems that are like, we have life koans, and we have koans that are part of the literature of Zen. And they always express something very helpful. It's kind of a poetic expression of a deep moral, ethical, spiritual question. In this case, Fuketsu is giving instruction to the community. And he says, if one raises a speck of dust, the house and the nation prosper. If one does not raise a speck of dust, they perish. Then someone in the audience picked up his stick, Seicho, and said, is there anyone who lives and dies with this? So, you know, it's kind of like encouraging people to really listen to that question. If one raises a speck of dust, the house and the nation prosper. If one does not raise a speck of dust, they perish. This one's very rich, actually, if you let it sink in. You can think of that speck of dust as any action or any activity in the world. And that you could think of the nation as the world itself. So if one raises a speck of dust, the house and the nation prosper. So the nation is the world that responds to this action of raising a speck of dust. So, you know, this is a quick lesson in koan study, is they're all about one thing. All of the koans are about our relation, the individual relation to everything, which has been very poorly translated as emptiness. But I would rather call it boundlessness, or the vast interpenetrated universe. So in the understanding that it's all one, there's no action. There's just no activity at all. There's just... But how is it a way to live? How is that a way to serve? You have to have action. You have to get up off the cushion and go down the street and give a buck to the guy with no legs who sits down there every Sunday afternoon. You have to act. So he's saying, don't get lost in your idea of spirituality, but raise up a speck of dust. Be a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva who bends down and cares for someone in need, who responds to the world and doesn't just say, oh, suffering is empty, hunger is empty, betrayal and deception in the government is empty, I don't need to pay attention to it. But a bodhisattva is responding to what's happening in each moment in the world, responding appropriately, raising a speck of dust. Our activity is what makes the world flourish. And this is how I understand what I was talking about at the beginning, right livelihood. That's everything that we do, the choice of a plastic bag or not. Each little choice that we make all day long in our activity is what makes the world flourish. So there's a kind of interesting thing in the commentaries of this, and you know there are many. There's a curious phrase that I had to track down. It says, whenever there's activity, whenever the world is flourishing, the peasants frown. What could this mean? Whenever things are happening in the world, there's activity, people are being served, the peasants frown. And then if you read a little bit further, the commentary contrasts the peasants with crafty ministers, setting up a dichotomy between these two classes in China. The view that peasant represents a simple, agrarian, elementary way of being. I could extract that to an unconstructed view of reality. Emptiness. The peasant is representing emptiness. And the peasant frowns when there's activity. When there is a more complex understanding of the world. This, who manages the nation are the crafty ministers. You know, we like that word crafty. You know, we're like an untrustworthy. But when someone raises an issue, when someone raises a speck of dust, when someone raises a form, that makes the peasant in our mind frown. We want everything to be just fine, just fine. And we're faced with this news these days where we're constantly, you know, and our crafty minister is trying to figure out the best thing, the best strategy that we can use. And we want to withdraw to this peasant mind that's just going to be accept everything. That's just things as they are. So this koan is really about this struggle that we as spiritual people, as Zen people, have between our desire for peace, internal peace, quietude, and this other aspect of our life where we recognize our responsibility to serve, to act, to not be empty and boundless all the time. If one does not raise a speck of dust, they perish. So if you don't raise a speck of dust, it's all simple, quiet, death-like. That's what he's saying, death-like. Emptiness, nothing exists in emptiness or boundlessness. It's the dark side. And the crafty ministers are in the active aspect of reality. If we don't recognize and activate form, we just sit quietly and passively experience what's being handed to us. In that space, there's no fairness or unfairness. There's no you and me. No suffering, no pain, no fear, no old age and death. Sounds like the Heart Sutra, doesn't it? This is what the Heart Sutra is all about. Just a different way of expressing it. There's just flow. It's very seductive to us. As a matter of fact, the commentary says, in this space, if one does not raise a speck of dust, they perish. The old peasants come out and sing hallelujah. Huh? That part of your mind that just wants to be at peace, just wants to be quiet, just wants absolute no conflict. That part is saying, hallelujah. Huh? The realm of simplicity. You know, it's a lovely celebration. I would love to have met this author of these commentaries. They're so funny. But the pointer, you know, at the beginning of every koan, there's a little pointer. There's something that, and it says, barehanded, empty-fisted, 1,000 changes, 10,000 transformations. Though this is making something out of nothing, what can you do? You employ the provisional to symbolize the real. But tell me, is there a fundamental basis or not? We employ the provisional, it says, you know, and the provisional is our everyday life. It's just there for a moment, and then it's gone. It's an example of the emptiness, of the vastness, right? We employ the provisional to use our day-to-day reality, that speck of dust, to symbolize the real, the vast interconnected truth that is always here, right now. Each of us sitting here have a slight other thought going on at the back of our mind, maybe a little twitching of the body muscle somewhere, something like that. And yet we're also all this one thing. And then we're like in this building that is this one thing, on this street that, and two realities constantly present. And then it's our own breath, our own consciousness that is able to dip into one and then dip into the other and not stay in either realm. So it also says somewhere here, and I can't find it right now, something about gold dust. Don't get gold dust in your eyes. Gold dust is the Buddhist teachings. You know, valuable, precious gold. Dust, speck of dust, gets in your eye. Then you get caught up with your romantic view of spirituality, and you lose the demand for you to serve in the world as you can. So I ask you, how can you not set up a speck of dust? It may distract you, you know, if you're planning some kind of protest or demonstration or writing a letter or calling a senator or something. That may distract you momentarily from no dust, from no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. But finally, as Secho asks, can you live and die with this? In a final comment, Yuan Wu says, heaven, earth, and the whole world is one gate of liberation. How will you establish it? So he's brought those two parts back together again in that comment. The whole world is one gate of liberation. We don't choose emptiness over form. We don't dismiss the suffering in the world. Even the word suffering doesn't reach it at all. Or only because it's part of the world. Nor do we choose form over emptiness, not recognizing our relationship through all space and time you know, go to the museum and go look at the at the some of the ancient art that is there. And this is part of me too. Recognize that. We're related to every speck of dust that has ever been. Even at the same time that we're no more than a dream and delusion. So while I'm alive, I'm offering myself up as a speck of dust, doing what I can to serve. And I also let it go. And allow the world that I think I see dissolve into vast, boundless space. So we're here, we're responsible for everything. Please, let's take a look at our lives. See how we can serve. Each one of us can serve in some way, can offer a speck of dust. Take some time and look at the way this piece of earth is being destroyed. Thank you. Remember, you know, New York City used to be this like paradise of woodland streams, forests, trees. Let's consider what this earth needs to survive. Think of those in need of help now, here in this city, healthcare, education, a humane police force. Consider what's possible. Consider all the things that we could do, all the ways we could lift up a speck of dust. And doing that, you may be surprised that there is no speck of dust. Thank you.